Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My next interview was absolutely fascinating. It's about a brilliant and refreshing new film called Do Donkeys Act? Ashley Sabin and David Redman join me today from somewhere overseas. I don't know where they were, but it doesn't matter because we had an amazing conversation either way. We talk about the sentience of animals and particularly donkeys, and we talk about our relationship to them. In fact, we talk about relationships pretty much as a whole. We talk about emotions and what exactly is a living poem. We talk about mutual appreciation and equal value, and what does the gesture have to do with anything? Trust and reestablishment, and why maybe from time to time we actually might need a break from other human beings. We talk about the Anthropocene. What, pray tell, is that? And restoration and our responsibility and why we need to be present in this crazy beautiful thing we called human life. You're gonna find the interview fascinating. You're gonna find the film delightful. Make sure you get out there to see if you can find it. Do Donkeys Act. Conversation coming right up. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my writing and speaking, but also don't forget face2facelive.ca for more podcasts coming your way from the Toronto International Film Festival and writers and relevant issues, and hopefully some really engaging conversations soon to follow. And also rabble.ca for more writing and speaking and podcasting and blogging about issues that matter. Coming right up, Ashley Sabin, David Redman, Do Donkeys Act?
Well, welcome to Face. We are joined by two very special guests today. We have Ashley Sabin and David Redman here with us on the line. We're here to talk about their new film, Do Donkeys Act? It's a question I've been wondering about for some time now, Ashley and David. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So why don't we start with the title? Where does that even come from? By the way, first of all, I'm going to say right out of the gate, congratulations on a remarkably it's a beautiful film. It's funny, it's engaging, it's compelling, and it's deeply philosophical. It spoke to me on so many levels. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I think each of us, both of us, have a different response to the title of the movie. It's The title of the movie ends with a question mark, of course, but we're really trying to engage the sentience of animals and donkeys. And you go ahead.
No, I think that Do Donkeys Act is really sort of about animals, you know, like in our relationship to animals. And so it's sort of like, are they performing? And how are they performing? And then additionally, what kind of emotions are we putting onto them? And so I think that was something that we were really challenged with during the editing. making them have sort of human-like emotions and really resisting that. We didn't want that to happen, you know? And so it really became clear. It was like these, here are our quote-unquote actors, and are they acting, you know? And so what kind of emotions are they having? And so, it's hard because as viewers, we're human, so we're perceiving them in a certain kind of way, but, you know, they're animals. And who knows what they're thinking or feeling or, you know, what have you.
Well, we can't ask them to do anything. We have to be patient and wait for them to either stay still, which there's a lot of stillness in the movie,
sure,
or do something on their own terms. And I think that's part of where the title comes from as well.
At what point did you guys think or say that really, I mean, it's such a beautiful piece of poetry. Of course, Willem Dafoe's voice is magical and so engaging and just draws you right in. For me, it did anyway. And then, and the words, so intentional, clearly on your part. Did you ever think, wow, we're not really making a film. This is actually just a piece of poetry.
Well, it's funny you say that. So we actually have two versions. We couldn't resist the sort of non-mediated experience of having no narration. And so that version is called Sanctuary. And we premiered that in Rotterdam. No narration, just complete donkey experience. But then we felt like, you know, hey, there's this really poetic sort of experience going on that we also want to convey through words. Let's try narration. We've never done that before, but it's more like a poem, you know? So it's not typical sort of narration.
It's not expository.
Exactly. It's not expository. So then we try that, and that's Do Donkeys Act. And it's like the two of them separately, I think, act as two separate films. But as far as Do Donkeys Act and the narration, I mean, I think there's a lot to the experience that through words is just, it amplifies it. And I'm always one to sort of not want words and to just want gestures and to have long takes. But there is something about the poetry of it that does sort of feel like a living poem that, I don't know, it felt right. You know, it was like, we have to have these two versions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we call it speculative poetry.
Speculated poetry. Lovely.
Yeah, and so we're not trying to be cynical, and we're trying to really, you know, empathize and engage with the animals on their own terms. And that goes back to your original question of where does the title come from, and part of that comes from the speculation of, well, wait a second, donkeys act, turtles act, rocks can act. Where is the sentience, you know? Through the expressivity and the sounds of animals, of objects, and of people or species. And this is one thing we wanted to explore and just kind of throw it out there. And some people find it completely absurd and comical, and other people will say, wow, I've never thought about it that way. That's a good question. And you can cut this comment out, and I'm not certain you will, but you probably will. I think recently in the United States, a lawyer brought a photograph to court and asked the question, who owns this photograph? And it was photographed by a monkey. I don't know if you know this case. Do you know this case? Hello?
No, I actually don't, David. Sorry, I was on mute there for a second. No, I don't.
Yeah, well, it's in at the end, the judge ruled that the monkey owns the photograph because it took it, and so that gives priority to the sentience, the enactment, the experiential reality of the animal itself, and so that's one thing that we were trying to engage while making this movie, shooting the footage, you know, on the donkey's terms. What they do, how they gesture, you know, what they say, how they communicate with each other, and we as filmmakers were there to listen to them.
Well, I think it's so beautiful, the David Abram quote that you begin the film with. And I love the last, I think it's the last line of the quote. I don't actually have it up here in front of me, but something about stepping into their shape and then listening close. And for me, or was that the narration? But either way, for me, that's what, I mean, your film, of course, is about donkeys. It's about, you know, it's about environmentalism, and it's about, you know, the devastation that humans are causing to the earth. It's about so many things that are not even there and not even present. And I guess that's all about, you know, the poetry to me and the interpretation and all of that. But it really was about listening close and kind of stepping into a world that I kind of didn't even know existed, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I feel like you just completely defined our movie. I mean, everything you just is like exactly right. What we were trying to achieve. I mean, in a way that's not traditional, you know, didactic.
Right.
This is what you should think. It was more like, here's how you should exist in the presence of these animals, and here's this space to make that existence possible. But in the end, you're going to interpret it as you wish. But our hope is that at the end, you walk away and say, wow, here are these animals that I have thought very little about, or maybe I have assumptions about these animals. Where have they gone, and why don't I think about them? And exactly what you're saying, like the devastation of environments and the fact that they, you know, originally have been taken out of Africa and now they're no longer wild, essentially. They're at, you know, we have to care for them. And what do we do once we like no longer need them and then we have to care for these animals? What happens? And so mm-hmm. That was sort of like, you know, the sort of, I guess if you could say, like social issue of the film.
Mm-hmm.
They're passed from human to human.
Yeah. And so it's like, for us, that's like a very important thing of the film, but it's not spoon fed. So it's much more about the experience and how you feel and interpretive at the end, which is tough for people because there's a lot of long takes. There's a lot of interpretation. So there's a lot to endure with that, but I think it's important because that's their pace, you know, that's the donkey pace. I mean, it's at their terms.
But it's at their terms within an institution of someone else's making.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
As they're brought over, you know, and abandoned or abused and then discarded, and then the caretakers from the sanctuary, you know, find them and then help them and then rehabilitate them. It's always within a confine of a human making. So the question becomes, how do donkeys remake that habitat? And that's what I think we mean by it's on their own terms.
Yeah. Well, I think that for the it's on their own terms, but you know, one of my favorite lines from the film, and there are so many, and I can't even, I mean, we're not even going to begin to scratch the surface on what I want to talk about, the questions you guys have raised for me. But I see myself naked under the gaze of a donkey. And for me, I don't think it gets much better than that. Because for me, this is everything the movie isn't about in a sense, and yet is central to I think, I hope what you guys were trying to say, certainly what you said to me. And that is, how do I now, I mean, it's Socrates, right? How shall I then live? I felt, you guys are going to think I'm nuts, but after seeing the film, I felt this profound sense of inclusion. And belonging. I wanted to hug my wife. I wanted to kiss my daughter. There was just this sense of belonging. As crazy as that sounds, but I think it made your film through the eyes of a donkey allowed me to see myself in a new way. Is that a bit over the top, or am I moving in the right direction?
It's interesting because, you know, especially through, like, you know, doing these interviews with the release in Toronto, it's like, how people are perceiving our film, it continually reminds me, like, donkeys are herd animals. So they travel in packs. So the fact that, like, okay, we're following this sort of herd animal going about their existence, we become part of their herd.
Mm.
And I really felt that. I mean, I was pregnant at the time of shooting the film, and I never once felt threatened. In fact, they were curious. You know, they'd sniff the belly, kind of be, you know, interested. And so I don't at all, your comment, I don't at all find that kind of strange, because with their sentience, especially with donkeys, I really find they're inclusive. They're so curious. They're curious animals. I mean, it was, to me, in this weird way, it was like this reflection. Where are these documentary filmmakers coming in? And just as curious as we are, we have these animals equally as curious. What are you guys doing? What are you here? Why are you here?
Who are you?
So, like, I found
there's a beautiful moment in the film, I think, where one of the donkeys is maybe nibbling on the neck of another, and then seems to notice you, seems to notice the camera, and then stares you down, stares me down as a viewer. It made me laugh out loud, and almost in a way, I mean, that is the gaze, right? That's the gaze of the other. But I'm now being gazed upon by a donkey. I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah, there's that kind of double gaze going on. Yeah, I like what you said earlier, because just today I was thinking about this notion of recognition. And recognition, what I was thinking about is that it's not the ability of, you know, one in a position of power to recognize the other, and therefore they become part of, you know, what Ashley said, the herd. And there's another way of thinking about double recognition, and that is it's mutual appreciation of being recognized, that of equal value. You know, I value what you have, and you can equally value what I have. And how can we come together as a culture and share what we equally value, as long as it doesn't, you know, reduce the other to kind of this exploitable object,
right? A commodity.
Yeah, a commodity of you know. Because usually, you know, I've come across a lot of relationships where as soon as the recognition happens is, what can I get out of you to advance myself?
Right.
And that's something that I think when we relate to animals, and especially the donkeys and the mules, it's stripped away. Suddenly you're naked in front of an animal, and that type of human civilization, it's gone. There's a new way of relating to the other. And the other becomes a way of becoming imbricated into their fabric. And then suddenly it becomes a new way of negotiating from a position of a new space, but also, where are we? This is a bit strange. How do we begin from here? Does that make sense?
I think it does. Well, what I found so profoundly fascinating about it is that here's this film about donkeys, and yet I walk away kind of thinking about not only my place in the world, and my relationship to not only donkeys, but to others as well. And that's what I find so brilliant about what you've done. And I mean, I think that is the purest kind of phenomenological sort of, I guess, maybe response or experience, you know, coming out of a film. I think you want it to sit and to fester and to you want to water and nurture that over time. And our worldview and our perspective and our lenses and all these things, our experience will bear down on that. And I'm so glad that you held those long takes and that you had this poetic sort of edge to it, because I think it takes it into the profound. Now I'm just getting crazy, but it transcends itself as crazy. You know, maybe I've read a little bit too much Heidegger. Maybe I've
phenomenology, a phenomenology of experience, but it's not the interior experience of, say, you know, a Hertzian kind of phenomenology of the structuralism of the mind, but rather this is a phenomenology of the body, a phenomenology of encounter, a phenomenology of experience. Yes. And the way in which we experience the other is through the touch, is through the engagement.
So good.
So when
so
we
good.
Strip away the language, we strip away the words, what are we left with? And this is the kind of, this is how we position our audience. This is why it becomes a bit uncomfortable. Because there's so little language in this movie. Well, and what language exists is a bit of poetry that derives from a phenomenology of the encounter through expressivity.
And it's also not the way things are edited now, you know? Right. So it's like you sort of have to reprogram yourself instead of your, if you're not seeking out this kind of media, it's difficult because it's the media now is, you know, 3-second cuts. And it's like,
yes,
it's really hard to watch something where you're having to sit and wait and actually experience everyday life. I mean, we're editing a new film right now. And like, I even find myself like, oh man, I watched this woman for 15 minutes.
It's a 15-minute shot.
And I myself, I'm like, oh man, this is long, you know, but like that's her life, you know, that is her life. So why would I want to cut it? You know, it's like, let's experience it. Let's experience this person's life for 15 minutes. What does that even really mean in the scheme of things, you know?
Yeah.
Let's put ourselves in the shoes. I mean, that's
really, or their shade.
I mean, that's really at the bottom of it.
Nice.
It's not always easy when you're you know, how we consume media now is just,
well, it's not the media. The media consumes us in a way.
That's
why I appreciate his question about the duration of the long take.
Right.
Because the action itself is experienced through an uncut 3 or 4 or 5 minute shot.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and you know what? There's a real. It's interesting that you say that, David, because to me, there's also this is a whole other level your film's working on. And again, I suppose phenomenological and philosophical, maybe theological. I don't know. But there's a mystery and a wonder to this that like I see so much of us in these donkeys' lives. The will of curiosity is on their side, you know? I mean, why use words? I'm just taking some of the lines, as you guys know. Listen to their language. I mean, these are all things that aren't we supposed to be doing as parents and as brothers and sisters and friends and lovers, and yet we seem to want the quick cut. You know, we don't want to focus on that 15-minute cut, we're looking for the diversion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Completely. Does that make sense? Our son just turned 13 months and he spent, last night, 15 minutes walking back and forth within a 5-foot space for 20 minutes.
You know? That's and hilarious.
There's so much joy in just seeing and experiencing and hearing the pitter patter of the feet, you know, and this is related to the donkeys, believe it or not, because of, you know, the antennas of the ears. So it's not just about the visual references. It's also about the sonic. It's about the experiential. It's about the gesture.
That's true. Because they would talk to each other. I mean, they would be on other sides of the paddock. And that's why we have that scene in there. It's like they were speaking to each other. We don't understand necessarily the language, but you see their ears moving back and forth. And it's like
they're giving attention.
Yeah, they sort of know what they're saying to each other in a weird way. And so it's fascinating that what you're talking about as far as like giving attention to things and moments that not necessarily that you would give attention to. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard. And so for us also, that's a challenge. It's like, you know, let's accept that challenge and sort of think about, I don't know, how we can sort of interpret it and use it in our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. What's so beautiful to me, Ashley, is that it is a challenge, but it's also this profound affirmation of all that's meaningful and all that's important. This crazy beautiful thing called life. There's a moment, and you've got just such a beautifully framed shot of the two heads kind of pushing in up against one another, and the line I think is to exhale, rest, and nuzzle each other. I mean, I was almost in tears because I mean, isn't this what we really all long for? Of course, donkeys long for this. And I mean, I think for me, this whole film is about that. It's about the rescue. I mean, it's just so beautiful. Bodies remember. It's about trauma. It's about finding our way back home, and whatever that means to, I mean, it's going to mean something different for everyone. And it's just such a beautiful moment to exhale, rest, and nuzzle each other. You know, just this profound sense of inclusion and acceptance. Mm-hmm. So beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Yeah. It's part of the membrane, right?
Mm.
And I'm speaking obviously of Merleau-Ponty, and this is what he describes in your term as inclusivity and this sense of home and the encounter once again with the body. You know, and the other example I think is the trauma you mentioned of the massage scene.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, and it's also, but you know, bodies remember, and but they can also, you know, become rehabilitated.
Sure.
From that kind of trauma. And so there's a double ambiguity going on once again of the kind of displeasure of this touch from a human that previously had abused, you know, the donkey, but at the same time now it's attempting to heal the donkey, right? And so there's a reestablishment of trust going on, and it goes back to your notion of the nuzzle and the embracement. Yes. And this returning to home once again, you know, the excessive of the completeness.
How did you guys land on this? I mean, did you have some sort of profound experience with a donkey somewhere years ago? Somebody write you a letter? Was it? Yeah, just fascinated.
Yeah. Montreal, right?
Yeah, we were actually living in Montreal. And we had just finished a film on in Russia, set in Siberia, and it was pretty intense production. A lot of
it was just, called Girl Model.
It was called Girl Model, and it was it was a lot of you know, about humanity taking advantage of other humanity.
Right.
And so we just felt like, you know what, we need a break from humans. they're insidious little bastards. So we just need a pause from this. And so we were sort of looking for that. You know, we were looking for a story that was a challenge with just animals. And then David does a lot of his research in the middle of night, much to my demise. And he found this, his favorite author, whose name
is one of them. He's a bit of a romantic, but
is that's okay. Named David Abrams. And he made this.
Also Andy Merrifield.
Who, I'm sorry. Andy Merrifield. That's right. Who made a book about walking with donkeys in rural France. And so we thought, okay, what's this about? And then he was listening to the donkeys, and we were like, oh my goodness, that sound, you know, that
the
sound
bray.
Is just, it's, the it bray. Just gets into your core. Like
it reverberates.
Yeah, exactly. And so we thought, wow, okay, what is this about? And where are these donkeys? And there's a sanctuary. What? There's a sanctuary. Oh my goodness. You know,
what is it?
So we just went there. We went to England, to the sanctuary, but there's actually a sanctuary in Guelph, it turns out as well, which we went to. So they're kind of worldwide, and it just sort of fascinated us. But then the focus really wasn't so much about the care work and what, you know, specificity. Exactly. Of what was going on there. It was more just what you were even talking about, like the sort of, you know, it was really about the experience of being with a donkey. So that's what it really became about. And so the sound and the visuals were really important for this film. And yeah, so that was how we got interested, was, I guess, Siberian Russian craziness.
Right. I bet that won't be the catalyst for your next film. That's my guess. Could you have made this film about another animal?
I mean,
well, there's feral cats and there's feral donkeys, but
no,
I mean, there's a lot of politics of the donkey where in Texas, for example, there's feral donkeys, but you know, I choose my words carefully. A lot of them are assassinated or shot, you know, by snipers on helicopters, because I mean, it goes back to, I think, your second question. You know, this movie isn't only about human companionship with animals and, you know, human species and non-human species, but it's about the decimation of the ecology of the environment and how these sanctuaries arise within a specific kind of, you know, what's the word? It's the Anthropocene, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's upon us. And so, you know, these sanctuaries are a response to it. But at the same time, it's like setting up a dam for the flood that's about to happen anyway. You know, we very much admire and we appreciate the sanctuaries. And what they're trying to do is you know, restore a kind of wild, feral environment and, you know, increase, you know, the duration of these kind of protective lands and bring in animals that can reside within them. You know, there's honeybees there, there's, you know, there's flora, there's fauna, it's set aside, it's protected. And that's exceptional. That's wonderful. And so I think that's also part of what this movie is about. It's restorative, not only for human companionship, mm-hmm. but also the ecology. It's not do donkeys act, but do rocks act, do plants act, does dirt act, you know, how, you know, do forest act. And it goes beyond the visual reference, you know, the optical, you know, to the body, to the membrane, to the sonic, to the experiential. And so this is why there's so few words that reside in this movie.
Well, and I mean, and it sounds almost trite to say it, but it really is about relationship of all kinds.
That's right. Yeah, it's a relationship. And it's trying to embed, you know, humans not separate from, but a part of that kind of fabric.
Right, right.
And, you know, in every knot that exists, we're in that knot. And at the same time, you know, we tie that knot, and there's no way to really untie it. So how do we work ourselves, you know, within that knot?
Sadly, we're going to have to wrap up the interview here shortly. I can't believe we're coming to the end. But I mean, you both sound incredibly hopeful to me. Am I reading you right? I find the film is this beautiful, like I said, a beautiful reminder of all that's important and meaningful about, you know, who we are and why we're here. But I also see it as a bit of a challenge to say, you know, we need to be careful as we step into this unknown future.
I mean, yeah, I think both of us are sort of in a funny place, just as, you know, as far as what you were saying earlier, having kids. It's like this future that we have and we've created, what's to come of it, you know? Mm. How do we explain our relationship to animals, to our kids and our the environment and everything that David's talking about as far as like do rocks act and all that? It's, you know, it's super complicated. And I mean, for us personally, I mean, for me personally, the purpose of the film is to sort of just be with them, you know, because we don't take the time to, in a normal day, the experience be with these kinds of animals. And so when we are with them, what does that feel like? What does that sound like? What does that look like? And
that requires
cinema,
us to stop, you know, talking sometimes.
Yeah.
That's well, it's about, it's about being present.
These podcasts and these interviews is that we have to talk.
Yeah, it's true.
And we don't want to say anything.
Yeah, all you want to do is just play the sound of the donkeys. But I don't
That's
know.
Right. Maybe
I
mean, I'm thinking my next podcast should be just 30 minutes of silence.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think, you know, the thing is, yeah, is like, in a way we are hopeful because we do have like the next generation that we've birthed and come, you know, that are coming. So in a way it's like, we have to be hopeful. We have to be hopeful that there'll be some kind of change, a new way of thinking. But at the same time, it's sort of a warning, like if you don't pay attention, it's dangerous. So, you know, it's both, I think. I think it's both, actually. Yeah. If you neglect something, what happens to it? Mm-hmm. And where does it go? Mm-hmm. And
well, it's erased.
What happens, you know, to these animals that, yeah, exactly, that are not really part of our everyday existence, that were part of birth of civilization, really.
Mm.
So,
well, you just hit another nail on the head there for me. I mean, the film's about responsibility. It's about freedom. It's about choice. I mean, could you guys have worked more into a film? Could you have worked more layers in, you know?
Kind of being
facetious. I mean, it's just such a beautiful piece. And again, sadly, we're going to have to wrap it up. But can you guys tell us what's next for you? Or have you got anything pending on the horizon?
Oh my God. There's a couple of movies. One's on Kim's video in Lower Manhattan, but it's really it goes back to the 80s, you know? So video killed the radio star.
Video killed the radio star. Yeah. I have stories around that song.
Yeah. And then the other one is about an 82-year-old lady who is the last remaining resident of an abandoned Spanish village. And this is what Ashley was referring to, of giving attention to this 18-minute long take of her just cleaning her clothes in a village water, right?
Yeah, it was the central water and then she's cleaning. Yeah. So we have two different projects and kind of different tempos of editing. So it'll be interesting.
Well, I'm already looking forward to them both. And I got to say how much I've enjoyed having a conversation with you guys. And I'm sorry, I feel like we're cutting it short. We don't need words, David, but I feel like we haven't used enough of them in this conversation quite yet. Ashley Sabin and David Redman here with us today talking about their new remarkable film, Do Donkeys Act. Thank you so much for your time today, both of you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll have to meet up.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.